Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 12. With that, and since I was already up and about, I drove through the rain down the I-5 to the liquor's warehouse. And I figured I could take a look at the parking lot in the hours after the body snatchings to make note of the vehicles in their lot. Whatever and whoever else was visible down there. But the place was barren. Not tonight, honey. I pulled into the lot and circled the warehouse, got back on the freeway, headed north, and about 10 minutes later I approached Sandy's apartment complex, which was glowing like the center of the sun, with an aroma of booze and dope smoke and loud music, noise, people. But it was her crowd, not college kids, typically associated with such a bouquet. I kind of felt like an asshole because she knew I was a cop, and a connection by association through her was the only lead anybody had, and so far, on the disappeared bodies. And hell, for all I knew, she was a wolf lady too, and if that, then why not the whole of them? Anyway, whatever, here I was. I could get a good look at the nightlife, have a beer, and find out what the good word was this morning in the derby pack. There was a covered open-air common courtyard area with a running wet bar and several kegs tapped, but whoever had been staffing that drink service, if it had been anyone, had wandered off. Some people chatted here and there in the corners, but I didn't immediately see Sandy. Seemed like most everybody had receded from the wet outdoor air into the tables, living rooms, and kitchens of the townhomes, many of whose doors were cracked, and from which various smoke and music drifted, wafting out over the courtyard. I walked behind the bar and grabbed a can of lager and a yellow label from the ice well, lit a square and cracked open the lager. I leaned up against the bar. I had kind of a nostalgic feeling that wafted up from my younger days when I kept these sorts of hours and ran in circles like this. And the cold lager warmed the clammy autumn air quite a bit. One of the women walked up and dug a beer out of the same ice chest. "Hello, detective," she brooded. "Sandy's around. She's probably over at her place." "Thank you. You guys celebrating something?" I asked her. "Solemn, a little early this year. But the new moon's tonight," she said. She asked for a cigarette, which I rendered her. She put it to her lips, and I put a match to it, and I asked her what her position was. "Jammer, my name's Kitty Licker." "It's nice to meet you, detective," Kitty curtsied. "We've got a home match Saturday. You coming?" "I wouldn't miss it, my lady," I said. She smiled. We chatted. She gave me a partial tour of her tattoos. We finished our beers and walked together toward Sandy's flat. Sandy and a half dozen others were sitting around in her dwarvish and ontological museum-like dwelling, playing cards, smoking, and joking. A twangy record orbited the turntable pin. Sandy stood and greeted me with a hug and a kiss on both cheeks. The liquor's jammer who had walked me in sat down next to a guy who handed her the unplugged Stratocaster he was tinkering with. Sandy turned over the record, and she and I stood together in the kitchenette area. I asked her to elaborate to me about the bookmakers I'd met at the liquor's warehouse, whom we had discussed yesterday. Kind of shady European dudes, and they rotate in and out on their own time, and their own dime. They don't really socialize with us much, and I don't gamble on the circuit or anything, so I and the girls don't interact much with them, but people like them serve a purpose, ostensibly not the least of which is to make books on our bank track circuit, she said. As you suggested today, I mentioned to one of them that the cops had an unclaimed Russian guy at the county morgue. He just handed me a complimentary odds sheet, as they always do when I come across one of them. And went about his business, scribbling on a notebook and yakking with his associates. Generally, those boys add to the carnival flavor of the circuit anyway, and they don't seem to bother anyone, and there are a lot of interesting characters who hang out there besides them anyway. Oh, it's flavorful, I said. Speaking of which, thank you for today. She smiled. Anytime, baby. How's the case coming otherwise? I told her we'd had our first contact of any sort regarding the unidentified guy in the suit on the previous afternoon. That led us to believe there might be a connection, relevant as it may or may not be to the case, between the local bookmakers and the local drug dealers. We gotta admit, it isn't much of a shocker, she said. What's more, though, is that the unidentified body and the other two victims in the case were all three stolen from the morgue a couple of hours ago, I further explained. I didn't know what else to do but for her to come here and have a beer, I said. And I watched her thinking about it and her response. Raising the topic of stolen dead people must always bring about compelling books and looks on the listener's face. Wow, body snatchers, eh? It wasn't me, she winked. But I can see why you draw a possible connection with the bookmakers. Also, something weird is that Chinese sandwiches come up out of Oakland about the demise of the Chino Beavers, I added. Oh, pray tell, she prodded. The driver, by the Derby Jersey name of Firefly Beaver, had apparently turned into some sort of wolf lady they discovered upon fishing her from the bay. And then when they put the blade to her on the autopsy table, she quickened, ate the man with the scalpel, and ran off. The boys all unloaded on her, but she kept right on running. Jumped into the Oakland Inner Harbor about a mile away and disappeared, and this was yesterday afternoon, I explained. Then our three bodies disappeared out of the morgue this morning. She responded with a quick look of disbelief, then her face shifted to an expression that was steely quiet, sort of northeasterly bound countenance, like a look. Sometimes, Rick, things happen that don't make much sense. As a first responder, you know that. I would qualify this case of yours as one of those things, or one of a number of those things, or a number of those things in one case. And I don't have your bodies, but you may have mine again now. She gave a wave to her buddies, and they cleared out of the apartment and shut the door behind them. I woke up about 5 o'clock at Sandy's, probably about 30 minutes or an hour after I'd fallen asleep, to the sound of the tinny high-pitched alarm on my digital watch. Sandy was already not there, and I could hear rain outside. I used her restroom, and for the second time that morning, I replaced my trousers and my shirt and shoes and coat. I let myself out. The party was over, the courtyard was dark, the complex had finally gone to sleep, not a peep and not a person out now. The bar still stood open, vacant and dark, but still stocked. It was drizzling heavily, and it was naturally pitch with the absence of light on the new moon. I walked to the lot and keyed my car door, sat down inside, cranked the motor, and pulled toward the street. As I pulled out onto the thoroughfare and began to pull away, I glanced into the rearview mirror to see two figures standing at the corner of the parking lot egress that I just pulled out of. I looked quickly again, braked to light up the path behind me. But at that, there was nothing at the corner except rain. Temperature of my hair and skin plummeted. I knew I could lock the brakes, turn around, right bloody then, troll around the parking lot for an hour until the sun came up or whenever, and the rain stopped, and I still wouldn't see a soul. And all of this made for a pretty drafty ride to breakfast from there. I was a little wet, dizzy, and rumpled, so I made directly for Joey's kiosk to address this condition through his coffee. He was standing under the awning of his vendor's stand, looking into the precipitation, though visibility seemed only about 2 feet, no matter who you were or which way you looked. Up or down, the Pacific Northwest weather was going a long way toward giving everything a nice, cozy, self-effacing coat this week, fulfilling all kinds of stereotypes. A natural aid to forgetting the past. We stood there together, looking into the soup, having some nice hot brown water. Boy, how you look like hell, he said. One of the newspapers at his stand had a below-the-fold headline about the Chino Beaver's watery demise, but The copy didn't include any mention of the mystery which surrounded their driver and the late and former Firefly Beaver, nor her fiasco of an autopsy. The entire roster of the Chino Wheeled Beavers, Pirate League Bank Track Women's Roller Derby team, drowned in the San Francisco Bay late Tuesday or early Wednesday after their team vehicle, a decommissioned ambulance, plunged into the waters when the driver apparently lost control of the vehicle traveling southbound on Harbor Bay Parkway about a mile north of the Oakland International Airport, the lead sentence of the article read. "This, Joe," I said, "isn't the half of it." I told him the tall tale parlayed to us by the Oakland police on the previous afternoon. Joe, of course, had no pity for me. "Water, water everywhere," he taunted. "And that still isn't the half of it, Coffee Man," I said, having a slip of my own. "R3, they disappeared from the morgue very early this morning. And the only connecting lead we have, tenuous though it is, possibly links that morgue robbery and the unidentified Russian dead guy in particular with bookmaking attaches to the local skate derby team, to wit our own lovely and local Davy Jones Liquors." He laughed at me in the natural irony of the situation again. "Water, water everywhere. And Monsters Ate your only evidence," he chimed. His singing didn't stop the rain, but it did lighten me up a little for what had already been a very, 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 very long Thursday morning, and yet pre-dawn still.